If your dream is to work in the arts, there are some things you're gonna need. A specific set of skills, probably, a drive to work hard, certainly, and ideally, well, money. A recent study out of the University of Southern Denmark shows that if you want to be an artist in the United States, it helps to come from a family with money. In fact, for every $10,000 in family income, a person's chances of going into a creative field increase by roughly 2%. Says the study. In a country where white families have nearly 13 times the wealth of black families, well, that also tracks with the lack of representation we see across arts and culture in the United States. And I have two artists with me today to talk about what it means to make it in the arts and what the financial realities of the industry mean, not just for artists, but also for the art they are able to create. Sharon Loudon is a visual artist and advocate for the arts, and she's also editor of Living and Sustaining a Creative Life, a series of books. Welcome to the show, Sharon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me today.
And Leah Nanako Winkler is an award-winning playwright. Leah, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina.
Leah, let's start with you. How did you get started as a professional artist? What were some of the financial difficulties you had to deal with early on?
Well, I think just to start with, I'm from Kentucky and Japan. And when I moved here, I actually had no money, right? Like I come from zero financial stability on my family's side. So I really had to think outside of the box, and I donated my eggs for $4,500 just to be in New York. And that was all the money that I had. And I spent it all on a Greyhound ticket and putting just the security deposit down on my apartment in Bed-Stuy. This was 2006, 2007. And I got here, and just the shock of the amount of wealth that my peers who were pursuing the same thing that I was pursuing was extreme. And it was hard not to notice or point it out. And whenever you do point it out, people get super defensive if you come from money, right? Like, you always know when someone's rich when you're just like, oh my God, you're like kind of rich. And they're just like, no, my parents were just doctors.
Sharon, Leah, the first of all, I knew someone else in the 90s who did a very similar thing, who worked in musical theater, who actually did freeze and sell her eggs. Sharon, what about you? What did your financial sacrifices look like when you got in the business?
So I've always been an artist. And when I graduated from graduate school, I had amassed a huge amount of debt because my parents did not support me. So when I came here from graduate school in 1991, I had about $115,000 in debt, which is equivalent of $215,000 today. Paid that off in 10 years by moving money around, debt around.
But that's a miracle. That's a miracle. Yes.
But also applying for everything, like reaching for different opportunities. But I also have my share of jobs like bartending. I worked at Domino's Pizza. I know how to make pizza from that, which is great. Shine shoes at airports. And I've always sort of lived in the cracks, as my husband would say, in trying to freelance in this city, just making do.
So you guys are both describing some really big sacrifices, some would say. And Leah, I'm wondering if there were times when you felt like some of the trade-offs you were making were just too much. I mean, when you almost said, you know what, why am I even doing this?
Yeah, I think for me, I was so overcome with my love for theater that all throughout my 20s, it didn't exactly feel like a sacrifice, but my entire body was completely wearing itself out. I didn't go to grad school at the time. It wasn't even in the realm of my possibility to go to school or like take out a loan or get a credit card. And I was doing Craigslist gig after Craigslist gig after Craigslist gig. And it wasn't until I was first produced off Broadway after self-producing for a long time that I quit my day job, the first stable day job that I had, in exchange to be at rehearsal. But when that rehearsal ended, I didn't have a source of income, and I was 30, and I didn't have an apartment anymore in New York City. And that was the point where I thought, oh my God, I maybe have really screwed myself over in terms of any future that I had.
I mean, and we think about these things, and I know there's somebody out there probably saying, well, you know, for example, Sharon, they'll say, well, you decided to study the arts. You knew what the risks were involved. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody makes money off of being an artist, mm-hmm. right? I mean, Sharon, whose responsibility is it to really make sure that opportunities exist for artists who don't have a lot of money?
Well, I think it's a combination of people. It's the artists themselves. Secondly, I think it's the people who benefit from them. Like in this city benefits a lot from culture and the arts. of tourism, and we're not given back the resources that we need to survive here as well as we should and we can. I also believe that value of the arts is it's way underrated. I mean, the arts are applied in a lot of different ways. It's not just painting pictures, which is towards beautification, but also towards the wellness and the well-being of others, which I think a lot of people don't think about, really. They just take it for granted because aesthetics are everywhere. They're in politics, but they're in everything that we wear, we live in, and we breathe in. The arts are essential to our being.
Leah, what do you think in terms of the educational opportunities? Because what I'm seeing, I grew up as a low-income kid here in New York, but I had access to the arts. That was the one thing that changed my entire life, was having access to music teachers in elementary school who, you know, would provide you with instruments and art. Now, I know that those programs are getting fewer and fewer. Mm-hmm. Leah, what impact does that have on our future artists?
I think it's terrible because even though it is really hard for a low-income kid to actually make a career in the arts after going through that kind of program where it feels really safe and the teachers, if they're good teachers, I believe, don't tell you about the odds that are stacked against you, right? Like they build you up with confidence and give you the drive to sort of pursue this impossible thing as if it's possible. But there isn't a pipeline from that to a professional career. You have to carve it out yourself.
Sharon, you're nodding your head. What do you think this problem represents, and how do you think we should work on changing that?
Oh, it has to be embedded in our education system. There must be a reflection or respect of that value of the arts, and how do we create that bridge between from school into profession? Because there are a lot of artists who sustain a creative life. And then how do we look at artists today? Just because you have a day job, I don't even believe in that term, doesn't make you any less of an artist. And so therefore, how do we also think of who artists are today? We're not just in a little room in the attic painting things anymore. We're integrated in society.
And Leah, I'm curious, what impact do you think this money and the wealth in arts is actually having on the creative industry, the creative arts today?
It affects the stories that are being told. Mm-hmm. 100%. I think it affects us politically. There's a reason that people felt extremely heard by Trump in the working class, because there aren't a lot of authentic stories and a lot of material that's out there where people in those communities felt heard, and everybody wants to be seen and heard. The art world and the theater world is an extreme bubble, because if you really like boil it down, it is a lot of wealthy people making art for wealthy people, and it affects the stories that we're told that are being put out there that are honed as classics. Like, you have a lot of plays about rich white people fighting about property in a big house by the water. I call that genre like white people by the water, right? And these perspectives are deemed as universal. It affects the things that are being accoladed. It affects the canon. And we're told that this is sort of like the universal perspective that is great, when it's not. And I think that if we had more material and more content that appealed to what real people are actually going through, art would be more relevant.
Leah Nanaka Winkler is an award-winning playwright, and Sharon Loudon is a visual artist and advocate for artists. Leah, Sharon, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.